So this morning, our first speaking segment is called Process of Progress. Process of Progress. Behind every individual who finds success in business or ministry or career, there is a story, right? Often we see the results. We see, wow, look at what they're doing. But how did they get to where they're at? Today, you'll actually hear the intersection of three unique, very distinct, highly successful, deeply spiritual leaders in our Adventist church. And you'll get to hear their stories. A little sneak peek into how God has led each of their journeys. The process of progress. So what do a banker, a program manager, a psychologist, what do these have in common? I hope today you will see that golden thread of faith that intersects these journeys, the burden of the gospel that ties each one together. Our first speaker this morning is a face that I'm sure all of you recognize. He is no stranger to ASI, Denzel McNeilis. Both him and his wife have served as past ASI presidents, and he serves on the ASI Mission Incorporated, also owner of Sterling Bank in Hills from Minnesota. Denzel, we are so happy to have you here, and just even I always love hearing you come on stage and sharing your stories, even just like last night, the stories of evangelism and what God is doing. Welcome. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much. You know, it's an honor and privilege to be able to be here this morning to talk to you. But I just want you to know that whatever I say, I want to make sure that all honor, glory, and praise goes to our Heavenly Father. Because, you know, if you think about it, our earthly endeavors of what we do is really insignificant when you look at what He has done for us. You know, I was trying to decide what I was going to speak about today. You know, I grew up as a Seventh-day Adventist. I met my wife in the eighth grade. We got married when I was 20 years old, and we just celebrated our 40-year anniversary. So that tells you I've been working for more than 40 years. I started working in our family business when I was 8 years old. And as I tried to figure out what I was going to talk to you about today, I was trying to figure out what area would be the most important to highlight. I thought maybe I'd talk about how that my wife and I, when we grew up very poor. I mean, literally, it took us one full year to save up enough money because we didn't want to borrow money to buy a microwave. And, you know, we struggled. We worked very hard. We believed we should work half days, 12 hours a day. And it took a lot of time and effort in what we did. We were passionate about our business. There were 9 manufacturers when I started in the family business. There were 9 mixer manufacturers, and when we sold the business, we were the world's largest mixer manufacturer in the world. I became a president of our company when I was 26 years old, and you know we were really blessed. You know, the mixer business, I could talk to you about how we did our marketing, how we did our distribution systems, how we put it up, our systems for our sales and our management, our factory operations, how we did our production, how we set up our factory. I could talk to you about that when we did sell our mixer business, that there were registered or registered mixer trucks in the United States that were actually on the street was just under 69,000 mixers, trucks in the United States, and 69,000, I'm a banker, I should know numbers, 69,000, just under 69,000 registered mixer trucks in the United States on the street, and 62,000 had our name. So the Lord really blessed us. We are the world's largest in the mixer business. I could talk to you about how that we decided to go into the garbage truck business. And in 8 years, we came from starting in the business to be the second largest mixer or garbage truck business in the world. I could tell you the largest concrete plant manufacturing business. And we started in that and became the largest of that in the world. We also were in leasing and financing. We became the largest leaser of mixer trucks in the United States. And but then we always had all our people flying back and forth because they couldn't work on Sabbath. So we had all these trucks we were delivering all over the United States. So we had to buy airplane tickets. And, of course, we started buying a lot of airplane tickets. And I said, well, how do I get a discount to buy more airplane tickets? We need to become a travel agent. And I became, then I bought travel agencies, and I became the second largest travel agency owner in Minnesota. But then I decided I wanted to diversify, and so I actually bought a loan. And we started with that bank, and that bank, when I bought it, was $28 million in assets. But today, we're really blessed. I work with my son, Justin, and Tyler Coleman, my son-in-law, and we're a bank now of $450 million in assets. But the Lord really blessed us through all these efforts. But that's not what I want to talk to you about. I have three things I want to talk to you about. I want three things that I'd like you to listen about, learn, that I wish I would have known when I was your age. The first thing is, the most important thing, make God your partner. If you make God your partner and you're doing what He wants you to do, you'll be successful. Elder Fazee, I don't know, does anyone know Elder Fazee? I've heard of his name. I see a few hands. He was the mentor to Pastor Mark Finley. Elder Fazee had a saying that I really appreciate. He said, the secret of wisdom is knowing the direction the Lord wants you to go and following it. That's the secret of wisdom. But I also, the other thing I wanted to tell you was, when I started in business, wanted to be the first Adventist billionaire. Now, I know, you know, you think about billionaires today, but 40 years ago, $1 billion was a lot of money. Today, it's not as much as it was back then, but back then it was, and I wanted to be the first Adventist billionaire. But I'm going to talk about that a little bit later as I finish up when they tell me I only have a few more minutes. But the thing I want to tell you that I want is so important. Most people will tell you, never let a crisis go to waste. And I want to tell you what I want to spend a little bit of time on today is through crises, we were able to grow. Every time there was a downturn, every time there was an issue that came up to place, we looked at it as an opportunity to grow. And so I want to urge you today that as you get a crisis, as you have a problem, it's an opportunity to expand and to improve your business or your professional life. Like the first crisis that came into our family was my grandmother had open heart surgery. As a matter of fact, they tell me she was the first one in the Mayo Clinic to have open heart surgery in 1955. And what was there is my dad was there. We come from a scrap background, and they were there around, and she was there for a long time recovering. My dad was walking by, and they're digging a hole, and he yelled down the hole, "Do you need any help?" Because he wanted to get a job while he was sitting there, and it was to build the concrete plant. That's where he learned the ready-mix business. Then that grew. He bought. He said in the newspaper that he hoped to employ three people. He didn't tell the newspaper that one was him and one was my mom of the three. And when he went to buy, he started in the ready-mix business. It was very tough. He learned to weld on it. His competitors used to laugh at him. In a picture we have is that they always used to tease him whether it was a one-seater or two-seater outhouse was his office because it was so small. And but then what happened was he needed to buy a new truck. When we went to buy a used truck because he couldn't afford a new one, he went to buy a used truck. And he went down to visit the man. He agreed on a price for the truck. He went back and no one would loan him the money. When he finally found someone to loan him the money, back then, of course, communication wasn't very good. He went back down and the man had passed away. He says, so now what am I going to do? And the widow said, I'm just going to put it to auction. So he did. He was really discouraged about that, but he went back and he decided to go to the auction, went to the auction, and they were auctioning the trucks in lots of three. Well, he bought the three for the price he thought he was going to pay for the one. Went back and told his friends about it, sold the two for the price he paid for all three, and got his for free. And he said, boy, this beats hauling concrete. And that's how he started buying in the used truck business. So as a result of that, that happened. Well, then the industry started buying and selling used mixer trucks. And, of course, that went very well for him. He was able to pay off all his debts. And he was able to grow. And then that era came and went in our country. And he started buying new trucks, new mixers. And he created a need. And I won't get into all that because of time. But because of that, All of a sudden, we got all these trucks that came in. All these trucks came in, and to make a long story short, he tried to figure out how to build the mix, tried to get mixers. They wouldn't give it to him. They told my dad, Sonny, if you're so smart, go build your own mixer. And so we had to. So we built the mixers. So because of a car accident, we actually had a crisis, and we started our mixer business. Well, then we had a terrible article that was written about us, and I could tell you all about that. But we had a terrible article written about us, and because of that, a lot of things fell through in our sales, and we were able to, because of that, we started in the garbage truck business. And that really helped our business grow even more. And then last but not least, in the banking business, as I was in my banking business career, I couldn't grow in a certain area. I couldn't figure out why the Lord was not letting us grow in a certain area of Minnesota where we were building. We were having all kinds of problems. Everything was going wrong. It was a great industry, great market. I thought for sure it was going to go well. And it kept failing on us. Well, then the crash happened about 10, 12 years ago now. And through that, every bank in the region, because of that, I never grew, but every bank in that region went broke. And I firmly believe that if I wouldn't have had those problems, I believe I could have been in that situation as well. So you just never know how the Lord is going to lead you in your careers as you go, but take crises and turn them into opportunities. I see my time's almost up. I just want to say that I want to be an Adventist billionaire, but I found something way better than $1 billion, and that's the price of a soul. Each one of you, as you go into your professional careers, are going to have an opportunity to witness like never before. You're going to reach people that no one else can reach. You're going to be able to talk about Jesus when no one else can talk about Jesus to that individual person. You're going to be able to witness through your living testimony because of how you live. People are going to be watching you. And all because of that, you're going to be able to bring people to Jesus. And I will tell you, you can talk about all the money you want, and I can tell you all kinds of stories of wealthy people I've been through that aren't happy, and I can tell you all kinds of stories about that, but I will tell you this, there's nothing on this earth that's more joyful than seeing someone that you've studied with the Bible be baptized. And once you get that, like a friend of mine always says, it's a disease, and there is no cure. Thank you.
Amen. A disease of no cure. Love it. And I really love that point. How he said, the crisis is the opportunity to grow. Beautiful. Thank you, Denzel, for that message. Our next speaker in the lineup for Process of Progress is Jason Bradley. There's many things I could say about him. He's one of our programming directors for our young professional team. So it's been a privilege to work with beside him in a ministry, but he is also the 3ABN Dare to Dream General Manager. So he spends his days at 3ABN Studios hosting and producing television shows. And today you will be able to hear his story of how God called him into this beautiful ministry. Jason, welcome to the platform.
Thank you for that, Rebecca. It's great to be here with all of you. You know, I'm so happy that the way that we start in life is not the way that we finish. I want to take you through a little bit of a journey through my life, and we'll start with a part called the problem. The problem. I wasn't solving the problem. I was the problem. And so I'd say about the age of 14 is when I started going down the wrong path. Prior to that, my mother had worship with me day and night. She had me in church, all of those things. And she really worked hard to instill Christian values in me and in my brother. But as I was going through life, I started listening to the wrong type of music. I started watching the wrong types of movies. And so by beholding, we become changed. And what I was putting into my mind was the use and sale of narcotics. And I was watching that and listening to that. And all of that, and it was being glorified in the media. And so I began to gravitate toward a lifestyle that embraced those things, and I started smoking weed at an early age, 14, and drinking and partying and all of those things, all while trying to hide it from my mother. And I remember going down through life, and as I got older, and my habits became worse, and they just kept getting worse. And so I was smoking a little bit more. I was doing some other drugs like ecstasy, and I had to find a way to fund that, so I started selling drugs. And, you know, it was just a slippery slope. Sin is a downward spiral. We're talking about the process of progress. Well, I was headed downward. And I remember coming to a point in my life where I was about, I think, 19 or 20 years old. And I ran into a situation where I got really sick. And my stomach, I used to be in shape. I've been eating quite a bit since then. But I used to be in shape, and I went into this particular situation. My stomach started growing. It got bigger and bigger. And it was getting warm and harder. And I was in a lot of pain. And I was feeling nauseous. And I remember telling my dad, "Hey, Dad, I'm not feeling well. I feel like I might die. I don't know what's going on with me. I don't know what's wrong." He took me to the doctor the very next day, and they ran a test. They sent me home. I went back to the doctor again the following day. They ran a test. They gave me more medicine, and they sent me back home. The third day, my doctor was supposed to be on vacation. He happened to be in the office, and that was by divine providence. He ran another test. He told my dad to take me to the ER right away because my appendix had ruptured inside of me and sealed off my intestines, and they were about to go next. I almost died from that particular incident. I want to show you some pictures of when I was in a dark place in my life. As you can see here, I was clearly intoxicated driving, which I had no business doing either. And then here, I don't know what I was thinking, life of sin. And then there, another dark, dark place in my life. But I remember laying in that hospital bed and not being able to do the basics. And my mother had to help me up out of that bed, and she walked me over to the sink to help me brush my teeth. And as she was walking me over to the sink, she began to cry. And as my mom began to cry, tears streamed down my eyes because she felt her son withering away. I was flesh and bone. And I remember she walked me back to the bed. I laid back down and I told God, I said, "God, if you get me out of this, if you get me out of this, I'll change. I'll do something different. I'll leave all that stuff behind." 4 weeks into recovery, 5 weeks into recovery, they left my stomach open to close, so they just put gauze pads over it. I ended up hitting a known drug area once I could move around. I bought some drugs. I went out to sell some drugs, and I got greeted by the police. I got arrested. I spent the night in jail, slept on iron. I hit my rock bottom. I had to go through so much pain, shame, and embarrassment before I ended up not having a genuine transformation, but a behavioral modification. That was the last time I touched drugs. I was looking at a potential maximum prison sentence of 15 years. 15 years. But God had something different planned for my life. And so I ended up getting out of that situation, probation, everything like that. Now, to this day, my record is expunged. And you know what? I was so tired of being a part of the problem, and I wanted to be a part of the solution. I ended up making a shift in my behavior. I went on to manage a sports bar, was working like 70 hours a week, became a part of another problem, introducing people to alcohol and all of that stuff. And then I felt empty inside. And I recognized from my upbringing that I was empty because I did not have Christ. And so this is where that genuine transformation began to come about. And so I got a call from my mother. She invited me to 3ABN. She was looking for an assistant. And as she was looking for that assistant, I took that call and I said, "Mom, I'll come out there. I'll visit. I'll come check it out and see what it's all about." And I went there, and I remember Danny Shelton was standing up during the day of prayer, and he looked out into the audience and he said that if you leave this place and you can't get it out of your mind, then perhaps this is where God would have you to be. And I was working 70 hours a week in Atlanta at the time. And I went back to my job, and all I could keep—I couldn't shake the thought of 3ABN. It was so heavy on my mind. Never had anything weigh on me that hard. And I remember I quit my job. I went to 3ABN, and I wanted to become a part of the solution, and I did. I want to play this short video. I'm running low on time here, so we'll go to that. We'll play that, and then I'll wrap it up on the other side. As I look at the world today, I see a world that has strayed so far from God's ideal for mankind. Unfortunately, when Adam and Eve yielded to temptation, sin entered the world and life changed drastically. Soon after the fall of man, we saw the lack of value that was placed on human life. A prime example of this was when Cain killed his brother Abel. Fast forwarding to the day and age in which we live, we've become desensitized and witness real murders on television and the internet. As I look at the world today, I see a global pandemic that has been around prior to COVID-19, and it's called sin. I see parents that are struggling to train up their children in the way they should go. I see homes without fathers, or if the father is in the home, he struggles with displaying healthy emotions. I look at the world today, and I see the crime rate on the rise and a massive rate of incarceration. As I look at the world today, I see people that are surprised when they head to their demise due to their physical and spiritual diet. As I look at the world today, I see people being taken advantage of by financial predators such as pawn shops, credit card companies, and check cashing places. Even though there's a long list of problems that I see in the world, there's a solution that outweighs them all. The solution is Jesus Christ. 3ABN's Dare to Dream Network is here to introduce people to Jesus and to put on display the practicality of the gospel. We do that by creating television programs that deal with issues that are plaguing inner city residents. We are a Bible-based, solution-oriented network. If parents are struggling to train up their children in the way they should go, they can watch Pumped Up Parents. If fathers are having a hard time opening up, or they just don't know how to be there for their kids, they can watch A Father's Heart. If someone's struggling with criminal activity, they can watch The New Journey. If someone doesn't know how to make meals that are both delicious and nutritious, they can watch Creative Cooking. If you're tired of barely making ends meet, you can watch Dollars and Cents. We have programs designed with you in mind 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. We need you to partner with us. One way you can do so is by sharing Dare to Dream with two people. The other way you can partner with us is by sharing a link from Dare to Dream's YouTube channel on one of your social media platforms. You'd be surprised how sharing a link could change someone's life for eternity. Thank you for being a part of the solution. I wanted to become a part of the solution. I was tired of being a part of the problem. And God blessed me with a second chance opportunity. And I want to share with you the thing that hurts me the most, and it still pains me to this day, just being transparent with you guys, is that I led so many people astray in my past. But now I have the opportunity to lead millions to Christ. And that brings me great joy, great joy. We're on in Africa, covering West Africa, on Freeview Africa, 45 million homes we have the potential to reach out there. We're going into prisons and taking the gospel into prisons. God has something great in store for each and every one of us. And as I look out here in the audience, I see a bunch of people that want to be a part of the solution. And I'm so glad that you all are here today. And in the process of progress, I'm looking to grow the ministry, and I'm looking for an assistant. Talk to me about that later. God bless.
All right. Can you hear me? All right. Love it. It's the script to take us from problem to being the solution. Powerful. By the way, just so you guys know, all three of our morning speakers from Process of Progress will be joining us for lunch right here in this room. So if you want to ask them more questions, get to know more about their story, find them at lunch. They'll be and you'll be able to grab a piece of them. Our next speaker and our last in the lineup for Process of Progress is none other than, I have to say, It's so fun to introduce her because not only is she my friend, but she is also my work colleague at Beautiful Minds Medical, an awesome practice in Northern California. Dr. Katie Elson serves as psychologist there, and she has a passion for mental health. She is an international speaker as well as has developed her own ministry, which includes podcast and YouTube. And she will be sharing a little bit about how God has led her through this journey. Katie, thank you for sharing today.
Thank you. I will give $20 to anyone here who can name 20 Adventist biblically based psychologists. And I'll make it a little easier, maybe 20 Adventist mental health professionals. Now, this is an unfair question because I myself tried and failed. So I will not be losing $20 today. So the question is, why are there so few Adventist biblically based mental health professionals? And if you have some thoughts, I'd love to hear them afterwards. I will share with you two main reasons by also sharing my own journey into psychology. Now, I'll start from the very beginning. I am a pastor's kid, a PK. And as a PK, I saw a lot of brokenness both in the church and outside of the church. And when I say a lot, I mean a lot. And I think that's one reason why a lot of PKs leave the church. But instead of judging the church and the problems, my father taught us to understand that even within the church, hurt people hurt people. And especially in the church, because the church is a hospital, right? It attracts the most hurt people. As I understood this and I saw a lot of problems, I didn't immediately know I wanted to become a psychologist. And why is that? One of the main reasons I didn't quite know is the one first reason of why there are not many psychologists in the church. And that's because it's not introduced to us as an option. We hear of physicians, we hear of nurses, of pastors, of dentists, and all great professions. But mental health is not presented as an option. And so the first answer why there are not many Adventist psychologists or mental health professionals, it's not an option. And so I didn't know. I didn't know that it was an option for me. And so, although I didn't know it was an option, God knew that it was the option for me, and he revealed that to me later on. So you might ask, well, how exactly did you end up as a psychologist? So the journey is kind of an interesting journey. I was in high school. I graduated from high school. I said, I guess I got to go to college. Went to college. Somehow, some way, ended up in a course of psychology. Before you know it, graduated with a bachelor's in psychology. And then I realized you can't do anything with a bachelor's in psychology. And I thought, well, I guess I'm going to graduate school. And again, although I didn't notice that God was leading me, God had an intention of bringing me to the field of psychology. God was leading. And although my journey sounds easy, I'm actually going to pause for a second and rewind and share with you the struggles and challenges of going into psychology. Of course, with such an amazing work, the enemy will throw out many, many trials and tribulations. And so 10 years ago, I remember going into the church and going to church-related events like these and people asking me, oh, what are you doing? What are you studying? And I say, psychology. And this was 10 years ago. And they look at me, oh my. Second reason why there are not many Adventist mental health professionals is because even if you do hear about it, you're strongly discouraged against it. They would look at me and say, ooh, you're going into a heathen field. You're going to lose your faith. And I'll just pause for a second to say they had good intentions. There are many dangers in psychology, but there are also many beauties. And so I was discouraged against it within the church. And sadly, right, I started listening to the discouragement. And instead of feeling praised and encouraged, especially as a young professional, right, we need to be encouraged, like events like these, to encourage us into the fields that are needed most. I was discouraged. But God continued to validate my decision. And I want to share with you that also, not only from the spiritual side, but people started invalidating my decision even from a personality side. What I mean by this is I'm an ISTJ, which AKA is the logistician, typically engineers, lawyers, and so forth. And people said, oh, that's not the personality type for a counselor. And so some people can either discourage you from a spiritual perspective or from other perspectives. Satan was really trying to discourage me from entering into the field. And actually, those same skills or those same personality characteristics is actually what makes me a better therapist than if I had not had those skills and personality traits. And so discouragement from every side. And the breaking point for me was actually in my second year of graduate school when I was listening to a series online and on Audioverse on the danger of psychology, and I heard that this Adventist psychologist stopped her practice because she learned of these things. And I said, God, what have I gotten myself into? And so I seriously started looking into nutrition and PT. Those were two of my other interests. And I was thinking, God, I'm going to change my career focus. But God continued to have me persist. And now, not only was I discouraged from outside, from within the church, I was also discouraged from outside. Now, in the world of psychology, they found out that I was Christian, and supervisors, colleagues, and so forth, they started discouraging me from continuing on. They said, you're going to be biased. You're going to impose your beliefs. I don't know how many of you have heard that within the field of psychology or mental health, is they have this view of Christians that you're going to be an inferior therapist because you're going to be biased and try to force your beliefs on others. And so from outside, from inside, from both sides, I was being discouraged. And so much so that I remember even getting lectured by a supervisor for signing my emails, Blessings Katie. And I can share so many challenges of attacks from within the world of psychology as a Christian. But God said, Katie, persist. This is the way to walk in. Don't turn to the left. Don't turn to the right. Pursue what I have for you. And what I found so amazing was God started validating me through the very same things or same ways that people were trying to discourage me. So people use spirit of prophecy to say, these are the dangers of psychology. But then God used the spirit of prophecy to say, Katie, no, this is the way. If you read Mind, Character, and Personality, Volume 1, Chapter 1, in the very, very beginning, it says, she calls it the nicest work. To deal with minds is the nicest work ever committed to men. She later then says, it is the greatest work. Not only is that encouraging, that is empowering. God is saying, you are in the right field, Katie. So spirit of prophecy, he validated me. Reading the Bible, I started seeing the Bible in a whole new light. I realized that when we talk about Jesus' mission here on earth, we talk about teaching and preaching and healing physical ailments. But if you look at Luke chapter 4, he says that I came to heal the brokenhearted. Jesus was a psychologist. And if that was Jesus' job, I'm in good company. God started validating my decision. Although it was hard, although it was discouraging, God was showing me, Katie, continue. And why? Because if you look at the world around us, yes, there are physical health problems, but there's a mental health crisis. And so I'm sharing today my story so much more. And if you're thinking about mental health, come talk to me. But I'm sharing not just so you hear a good testimony, but I'm sharing with the intention that I hope you, someone here, may be encouraged to go into the field, or perhaps to support others that are already in the field, or if you're already chosen a field, to start considering incorporating a mental health component. And so please find me, whether afterwards at lunch or I'll be at the Beautiful Minds booth tomorrow around 1:45. I'd love to talk to you. There is a mental health crisis, but there is a wonderful counselor, Jesus Christ, and he wants to use you.
This media was produced by Audioverse for ASI, Adventist Layman's Services and Industries. If you would like to learn more about ASI, please visit www.asiministries.org. Or if you would like to listen to more free online sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.